Good evening. In the news tonight, President Obama's executive action on solitary confinement in federal prisons. New York City activist Noche Diaz heads to court. Anti-abortionists who faked Planned Parenthood videos go up on charges. Israel and Palestine are still at each other, the UN Secretary General reacts. And the Uhuru movement gathers in Harlem. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Tuesday, January 26, 2016. 16-year-old Khalif Browder was sent to Rikers for allegedly stealing a backpack. He was never convicted of any crime, but he was beaten repeatedly by guards and inmates, and he spent 2 years in solitary. At 22 years old, he killed himself. Browder is one of the reasons President Barack Obama has changed the use of solitary in federal prisons. He's banning it for juveniles and low-level offenders.
Really think it makes sense to lock so many people alone in tiny cells for 23 hours a day for months, sometimes for years at a time? That is not going to make us safer. That's not going to make us stronger. And if those individuals are ultimately released, how are they ever going to adapt?
Changes are the result of recommendations from a review by the Justice Department. Obama said some studies indicate that solitary can worsen existing mental illnesses and even trigger new ones. In an op-ed today in the Washington Post, he writes, prisoners in solitary are more likely to commit suicide, especially juveniles and people with mental illnesses. Glenn Martin, formerly with the Fortune Society, is with Just Leadership USA. It works to shut down federal prisons like Rikers in favor of the decentralization of prisons.
Between the Department of Justice report, which referred to the culture at Rikers as a Lord of the Flies culture, and the Khalif Browder case, I believe that created the momentum for our allegedly progressive mayor to step in and do something bold and audacious. And unfortunately, I think what he's done so far has been hugely incremental. And yet here comes our president making what I believe is a much bolder announcement, particularly with respect to solitary confinement and young people.
Glenn Martin says the Justice Department's study confirms that the federal government has been using punitive segregation as a tool to control the prison population.
Although the research suggests that the psychological effects obviously create more of a problem for running the federal system, but also that we have decided that our prison system is going to serve as a surrogate for mental health institutions. And so many people in the system need treatment over punishment. And we've become overly punitive as a country. And this is a chance for our president to remind Americans of that. I mean, years ago when we decided to start being so tough on crime, it was a conversation about how prisons were like country clubs. And I think this report makes it clear that our prison system is anything but a country club for the people who end up there. And that there's a huge over-reliance on punishment as a way to control people, and there's rarely any incentive for people to behave properly. And certainly we've moved really far away from rehabilitation and the other values that we say we care about as Americans. There's no proportionality, there's no parsimony, there's no social justice, there's no civil rights. And so what we do at sentencing is we knock people down a couple of notches in terms of their citizenship, and we don't have any similar equal ceremony to bring people back up and into society. And 95% of people who go to prison come home at some point. And the question is, how do we want them to come home? And our president is suggesting that causing them additional psychological harm and not investing in their rehabilitation is not the answer.
Back in the late 60s and 70s, abusive mental health institutions were closed down in the U.S., and now the same numbers show up in the prison system. The president's executive order will now expand treatment for the mentally ill. It also increases time inmates in solitary spend outside of cells.
Our prisons should be a place where we can train people for skills that can help them find a job, not train them to become more hardened criminals.
President Barack Obama calling for criminal justice reform at a speech he gave to the NAACP in July of 2015. While advocates say solitary amounts to torture, Obama said the reforms will affect roughly 10,000 inmates in the federal system. Roughly 100,000 people are in solitary confinement in the U.S. He's hoping that the changes will serve as a model for reforms at the state level. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. In other news, one of New York City's activists is set for trial this week. Noche Diaz, who led protests during Rise Up October and on other occasions against the police killing of unarmed people and against the non-indictment of officers who committed these acts, he's facing four misdemeanor charges, including obstruction of government administration stemming from two separate arrests. August 14, 2014, after a silent vigil and peaceful march through the streets of New York City days after Mike Brown was murdered in Ferguson. On November 25, 2014, the day after a grand jury refused to indict Darren Wilson in the death of Mike Brown. Charges could put Noche Diaz in Rikers for up to 2 years. Police reform advocates are calling for the Manhattan DA to drop remaining charges against Noche Diaz. They want the DA to provide the defense information of any and all political surveillance by the NYPD of Diaz and the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. Supporters are asked to turn up at Manhattan Criminal Court tomorrow morning, 100 Center Street, beginning at 9 a.m. In other news, Planned Parenthood said it all along that undercover videos about Planned Parenthood were misleading and that the organization did absolutely nothing wrong. Mark Richardson reports.
A Houston grand jury has indicted two anti-abortion activists who secretly filmed Planned Parenthood officials last year and then edited and released the videos. The indictment charges David Dowdleton and Sandra Merritt with the Center for Medical Progress with felony tampering with government records and a misdemeanor related to purchasing human organs. Heather Busby, director of NARAL Pro-Choice Texas, says she believes the indictments vindicate Planned Parenthood and its staff.
This confirms what we already knew. Planned Parenthood holds itself to the highest standard of care, they didn't do anything wrong, and that the anti-abortion activists will go to any lengths, including breaking the law, to try and disparage reproductive health care providers.
The videos portrayed Planned Parenthood officials as plotting to sell fetal tissue, a charge Planned Parenthood has consistently denied. If convicted, Dowdleton and Merritt could each face up to 20 years in prison. The Center for Medical Progress declined to comment on the indictments. Busby said state officials, including Governor Greg Abbott and Attorney General Ken Paxton, have used the videos in attempts to discredit Planned Parenthood and deprive the organization of state funds.
Even though the evidence was not in their favor, our state leaders used these widely discredited videos to launch an all-out assault on reproductive health care and Planned Parenthood and use this as an excuse to go after access to reproductive health.
Harris County District Attorney Devin Anderson said her office originally began investigating Planned Parenthood, but in her words, evidence of wrongdoing led to Dowdleton, Merritt, and the Center for Medical Progress. State officials said Monday, despite the indictments, they will continue their investigations into Planned Parenthood. For Public News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
Turning to international news, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon slammed Israel's settlement activities. He labeled them as provocative acts that raise questions about its commitment to a two-state solution amid growing Palestinian frustration over nearly 50 years of occupation. He says Israelis and Palestinians must act now to prevent the possibility of peace slipping away. Veronica Reeves reports.
Sadly, 2016 has begun much like 2015. Ended with unacceptable levels of violence and a polarized public discourse across the spectrum in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territory.
That was Secretary General Ban Ki-moon addressing the Security Council at UN headquarters on Tuesday, urging Israelis and Palestinians to find a way to end the continued violence and tension in the region. The UN chief said that a political solution to the conflict was the only way forward.
Some say the two sides are entrenched in their respective positions. I say that we must not succumb to passivity, resignation, or hopelessness that the comprehensive resolution of the conflict is not achievable.
Riyad Mansour is the Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations. He said the world had just stood by idly as the Palestinian people suffered at the hands of the Israelis.
All peoples are entitled to security, not only the Israelis. I repeat, all peoples are entitled to security, including the Palestinian people. It is not exclusive to Israel and cannot be achieved by illegal and aggressive actions that only fan the flames of violence and intensify anger and tensions. These unlawful actions must be stopped.
The Israeli ambassador to the UN, meantime, Danny Dannon, also addressed the council. He said his country was committed to finding peace, but that the Palestinians continued to derail progress.
Every difficult journey begins with a single step. Sitting down and talking is the first step to peace. But the Palestinians refuse to come to the table. What does Israel want? Simple. We want peace with security. That is the only peace that will last. And the Palestinians, they demand concessions without negotiations.
Secretary General Ban Ki-moon told both sides that despite their clear differences, they must work with urgency to find a common ground.
The parties must act, and act now, to prevent the two-state solution from slipping away forever.
Veronica Reeves, United Nations.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. There's bad news for those retiring in New York State. Andrea Sears has the story.
Affordability is a key factor in deciding where to retire, and a new survey puts New York State near the bottom of the list. The survey by the personal finance website Wallet Hub says New York rates 49th out of the 50 states plus the District of Columbia for its high adjusted cost of living. Jill Gonzalez, an analyst with Wallet Hub, says New York also is close to the bottom in the survey's taxpayer ranking.
That looks at the friendliness of taxation on pensions and Social Security income, as well as what other kind of taxes are assessed.
Overall, New York ranked 44th out of 51. Florida was ranked the best place to retire, and Rhode Island came in last. Gonzalez emphasizes that affordability is not the only consideration for retirees. She says New York rated at or near the top for some indicators, including life expectancy.
The quality of life is going to be great as well. You have a lot of things to do, from museums to theaters to music venues and even golf courses. Unfortunately, it's just going to cost you a lot.
Surveys indicate about one-third of American workers haven't saved anything for retirement, and Social Security replaces only about 40% of average earnings. As Gonzalez points out, that can have a major impact on a person's retirement plans.
Those people that do retire and really haven't accounted for how much they're going to need to live on have to go back to work. So you want to be in a place where they're very friendly to hiring older people.
She says New York was near the bottom of the list of states for the percentage of residents 65 and older who are employed. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
The International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement gathered in Harlem this afternoon as part of their countrywide tour. Zach Murphy attended the gathering, and he filed this report.
We demand our reparations. We demand to have the power to govern ourselves. We saying that that's the only way that we will ever be free. That's the only way that we can ever have an American dream.
Uhuru means freedom in Swahili, and the Uhuru movement has been spearheading the modern reparations movement within the United States since the early 1980s. Commonly referred to by their acronym, INPEDM, the Uhurus are gathering a petition to submit to the UN Working Group of Experts on People of African Descent. The UN panel is currently touring the United States, meeting with citizens, community groups, and politicians before it submits recommendations on how to improve relations and conditions of African people within the U.S.'s borders. The UN panel is conducting their fact-finding missions in Jackson, Mississippi, Chicago, New York, Baltimore, and Washington, D.C. before they release their findings. They want the international community to acknowledge that genocide has been and is still currently being committed by the American government against its African population. For these reasons, their multi-city tour has been dubbed the Africans Charge Genocide Encampment Tour. Zach Murphy, WBAI News, New York.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, January 26, 2016. The news was produced with help from Mark Richardson and Andrea Sears with the New York News Connection, Zach Murphy with WBAI News, Veronica Reeves at the UN, and Reggie Johnson at WBAI's Brooklyn Studios. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry. Thanks for listening. Over to you, Juliana.